twist, but you still have the freedom to travel.
Get out, see the world, because you can.
Everyone, this is Cindy Stretz with the Freedom to Travel live internet program, airing every other Sunday at 6:55 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11:55 Greenwich Mean Time or 3:55 Pacific Time. You might want to call today and speak with our guests, so quickly grab a pen and paper and jot down our numbers. If you're anywhere in the world besides Canada and the United States and you'd like to contact us, you can call the direct line at 530-876-3222. If you're calling from Canada or the United States, you can dial 888-815-9756. Anyone in the United States can also call 877-876-5227. And you can find those numbers also on the BBS website, or you can call, get a hold of my personal website at www.freedomtotravelshow.com. I'm the executive producer and host of a television series that I created called The Freedom to Travel Show. It has three themes. One is my guest, one is their disability, and one is the accessible travel destination that I take my guests to. The purpose of the show, The Freedom to Travel Show, is to raise awareness within the general public. So I use highly motivated and accomplished guests to educate the viewer about their specific disability while I provide a service to those of us with disabilities. This radio program is an extension of it in that we are traveling, but not in the literal sense. Instead, we're traveling deep into our hearts to enhance our love, connection, and understanding of one another. This is a journey into a heightened awareness and a new perspective or outlook, if you will, on issues of disabilities. I am proud to introduce and announce my guest today, but first I just wanted to inform you that my co-host, Josie, and I will both be interviewing this beautiful lady, Miss Jerry Jewell. Jerry began her career as a comedian in 1978, and was later hired to play a groundbreaking role as Lisa Welchel's cousin on The Facts of Life, which in fact made her the very first disabled actress to play on a television series. And also, they openly discussed issues around cerebral palsy. It was just open to the public, which is a giant hurdle in and of itself. She's since then gone on to do numerous motivational speaking presentations, and she continues to play various roles in Hollywood. Her most recent project was a series on HBO called Deadwood. So, also, while I was in L.A., I got to meet with her, which was just an honor for me, and I just fell deeply in love with her. She's an amazing woman, and I know you're going to feel exactly the same way. So without further ado, I don't want to waste any more time. I'd like to welcome our guest, Jerry. Hi, Jerry. You there?
Hello, I'm right here.
Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. How you doing, Jerry? I'm doing well, thank you.
Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
You know, I wanted to ask you a question. I know, growing up for me, as you know, I also have cerebral palsy, and I think the hardest part is growing up with a disability. So, for you, what was it like growing up with cerebral palsy?
You know, basically, I was not integrated into, I was not mainstreamed into regular school, so I was best at special schools. And so, I was sheltered as a kid. I had a very sheltered outlook and life, but, I had a very supportive family that made up for it.
Right.
And the kids that I went to school with were wonderful. So I grew up with a sensitivity to all disabilities because I went to school with children with disabilities. So it was just the norm for me.
Remember what happened after that?
Pardon?
But I said, what happened then? And you went to college?
Was integrated part-time into high school, into regular high school, and then I did go to college for 3 years, yes.
Okay, yeah, and you were the first person with a disability, like Cindy said, to have a regular role on a primetime series, which was a faster ride, which, by the way, I grew up watching you. I admired you then, and I admire you now, and I have to tell you, I want you to tell me a little bit about that role. You know, what was it like to play Cousin Jerry on the Facts of Life?
Well, it was a groundbreaking role, as you say. It was never done before. And I was introduced to Norman Lear by Norman Brooks, and 3 months later they wrote the episode Cousin Jerry. And there I was, history was made.
How did you get the role?
I was performing at the 2nd annual Media Access Awards, and Fern Fields and Norman Fields introduced me to Norman Lear that night.
That was about
2 years into doing stand up.
I'm still doing stand-up,
but not club work like I used to. I stopped club work in the late 90s, I guess. No, mid-90s. I would say 95, 96.
Okay, well, I can tell you, I think you stressed the word abled in the word disabled when you did that show. It was definitely groundbreaking. But what were the difficulties between acting and being disabled? You know, was it harder for you as a disabled actor?
I think the only thing that makes it more difficult is the expectations are not as high. In other words, you're not given as much to do because afraid you can't do it. So you're always striving to prove that you can do more. You know, give me more. Give me something to chew on. Do you understand what I'm saying? So
right.
You're always trying to prove that you can do the norm and you can go beyond the norm if just given the opportunity. There's a lot of people that are afraid you can't do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who say you can't do it.
Whether it has to do with fatigue or, you know, long hours or memorizing that many lines or whatever, but it's a skill. I mean, I'm very trained as an actress, and I can work long, long, long hours without being fatigued. But the automatic assumption by people who are not disabled is that people who have disabilities cannot handle long hours of work, which is so
exactly. Exactly. It's just an assumption, and it's difficult for anyone, whether you're disabled or not. It doesn't matter that you're disabled. Your most recent role, you played the part of Jewel on the HBO hit Deadwood. Tell me about that role.
That role came to me in a pharmacy. Seriously, you know how Lana Turner was discovered in Schwab's?
Yeah. Okay. I got you.
Well, it was very similar. I was in a pharmacy, and David Milch was in the pharmacy at the same hour and offered me Deadwood on the spot before it was on the air.
I hate to interrupt you. First, I just want to tell our listeners that both of you guys have hit it off really well, A, because you both have CP, but B, you're both hard of hearing. And you are not hard of hearing. Is it hearing impaired? What's the proper thing to say?
Hearing impaired.
Okay. And also, we have a caller, guys. Somebody's here that would like to ask a question or something. Hello, caller?
Hi, my name is Frankie, and I'd like to say, you know, thank you for putting Jerry and Josie on the air. I admire both of them, and I follow their work, and I've followed Jerry's work as well. Facts of Life was one of my favorite programs. I never missed an episode. The question I had was, if I can remember correctly, Charlotte Ray, she had a daughter with cerebral palsy also. Is that correct?
She had a son with... I do not believe that he had cerebral palsy. I believe that he had a developmental disability and maybe autism. But I don't think he had CP, no. He may have had mild, not sure.
Okay. Did it change the dynamic of working with Charlotte Ray when you were doing Facts of Life?
Well, I think that any time you work with parents of total disabilities and you have a disability, you're going to remind that parent of that child. It's hard not to. I mean, there's that dynamic, yes. And, but that happens.
Thank you, Frankie, so much for calling in.
It's not necessarily negative. That's not what I'm implying. What I'm implying is that there's an intensity that wouldn't normally be there if the parent did not have a child with a disability. Does that make
right.
sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't help it. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I know. I was just having dinner with my mom before, and my mother said, you know, when you were a kid, you told me that CP, your cerebral palsy was my fault. And she said, you know, I was watching the news the other day, and they said it has nothing to do with the parents. It happens during or after birth. And I looked at her, my mouth dropped, and I was like, Mom, did I say that? And she said, yeah, there were times where you were very angry, and you used to say it was my fault. So the... You know, I don't remember saying that to my mother, but I'm sure growing up I carried a lot of anger with me. Of course, now older, it's different. You know, so there are a lot of things that parents of the disabled have to deal with that parents who don't have disabled, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Thank you so much for calling, Frankie. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye, Frankie.
Have a great day. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye. Hey, Jerry, I have a question for you. It's kind of off the topic, but something I think is interesting. I want you to fill in the blanks. If you could go back and change blank, you would change what and why?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't believe there are any accidents in life. I believe that everything happens for a purpose, whatever that purpose is, even the most painful experiences that we go through in life. So to be honest with you, to be really, really honest, I don't think I would go back and change anything. I think that whatever journey I took is the journey that I was supposed to take.
Beautiful.
And that's my gut level feeling on that one.
Well, I certainly believe that your experience, especially what you've done to the mass community as far as raising awareness around being disabled, but especially around issues of cerebral palsy, I think it was well before your time. Do you know what I'm saying? Right now, I think is time, but yeah, you've definitely made a big impression there, and that you are the perfect person for it.
Yeah, you certainly were.
Go ahead.
You know,
I was. I'm right here.
Okay. You mentioned before that you were in the pharmacy and someone came right in and offered you the role on Edward on the Spot. So there again, you know.
To Dave Smith, yes.
Yeah, I mean, everything happens for a reason, like you said, and I agree with you. I wouldn't change anything about my life either.
And you know what? That's an ongoing theme I'm finding with people with disabilities. There was actually somebody told me about a survey they had done recently. Actually, it's Alan Rucker, who will be airing on the next show in 2 weeks from now. There was a survey done with people around muscular sclerosis, I believe, and like 75% of all of them said they would not change their disability for anything, that it's actually molded and helped them to become the quality person, if you will, because mm-hmm. of their experience.
I think what it also touches on is that you have to at some point make peace with yourself and your body, whatever it is that you're dealing with. And I think the quickest way to make peace is to not continue to scrub the fact that, oh, I wish, oh, it could have been all of this, all of that, because then you're constantly going to go back in your mind over and over, oh, I wish, and you'll never be happy. I think once you make peace with who you are and what you've done, and you can move forward. That's the only thing any of us constructively can do, is go forward with whatever we have in life. Going backwards doesn't get us anywhere.
Doesn't help, no. No, not at all. You know, you able-bodied actors, if you will, have been able to accomplish what you've accomplished. And, you know, looking back over all of your success, who would you credit for your success? Who or what would you credit for your success? And who would you say was your role model?
You know, I think, well, God, that's an interesting question. I wanna automatically say Carol Burnett. And yes, she was a role model in the fact that she had such a wonderful sense of humor about herself. And that was the kind of humor that I wanted to do in my own life, was to have a sense of humor about myself and make people feel comfortable around me. I think a part of my success was that I was so isolated and so made fun of as a child that I went to such a gigantic extreme to overcome that. It's like I'm an overachiever, if you will.
Yeah, I understand what you mean perfectly, because that's how it was for me. I was constantly picked on. So it made me want to try harder, because not only did I want to prove something to myself, I wanted to prove something to everybody else out there. You know, I can do what I want to do. You'll see. I'll show you. You know, now, older, I do things for myself. But years ago, I felt like I had to prove something to everybody else, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, and that's youth. And then when you mature and you find out, wow, I didn't have to do all that. I could have... Wow!
Hey.
I'm great, this is where I am.
Yeah, I didn't have to do that. I don't care what they say about me, you know?
You know what? Carol Burnett is an amazing icon. You're absolutely right. I love the way you said, you know, she made people feel comfortable about her, you know, just being herself. And so you found her. She was an icon for you. And I identify with that. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you too, Jerry, is you said you were in a specific school until high school when you integrated. And to, you know.
I was integrated partially in high school, not totally. I was not.
Oh, I see. How did you find that?
College. How did I say that again?
How did you find it? What was that like for you?
When I was integrated the first time?
Well, yeah.
High school or college?
High school.
High school was, you know, I was a teenager with raging hormones and trying so desperately to find an identity, and was made fun of so much in high school. and I wanted to be non-disabled so badly. So I spent so much of my high school years in denial of who I was. In fact, I think I was probably, that's when I started writing Carol Burnett. I actually wrote her, I have about 12 letters from her, from age 13 through 17, 18. Dear Carol Burnett.
Wow, she replied to you, and she was very famous, and still is. And what was her letters like?
I did go to her show once when it was taping at CBS back then. I think it was in 1974. And I tell a joke about Carol Burnett in my routine all the time, and it goes over really big. It's very funny. But comedy is not the total truth. Comedy is comedy. And what really happened that night was I had gone there with this huge expectation to talk to Carol Burnett, and they turned up the house lights at the beginning of the show, and I raised my hand, and I was devastated that she didn't call on me. And then, they went into the show, and all I could do was sit there and complain, oh, God, I didn't get to talk to her.
And you'd already performed.
I'd be like, will you shut up? So about halfway through the show, they took a break because Tim Conway was making Harvey Korman crack up, and they had to take a break. And Carol came walking over to me. And Audrey, who was with me, my dear friend, she said, well, you better think of something to ask her real quick because she's coming over here. Oh, she is not. Yes.
Thank you.
And she came over to me and she extended her hand. She said, hi, I'm Carol Burnett. You must be Jerry Jewell. And I was stunned. I was 16. She knew who I was. She said, I love your poetry. I actually have your poetry up in my office for everybody to read. So she knew I was that little girl that wrote her all the time saying, Dear Carol, I want to be a comedian like you.
How sweet. I hate to interrupt you guys again because we'll talk about Carol Burnett again in a second, but I have another caller on the line. Hello, caller, are you there?
That's fine.
Hello, caller?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
Who's this?
This is Ann.
Hi, Ann. You have a question?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Go right ahead.
How did you come to accept your disability?
How did you come to accept your disability, Jerry? Our guest, Ann, is asking, how was it that you came to accept your disability?
I honestly think humor had a lot to do with it. I honestly believe that my ability to laugh at myself was a great therapeutic way to accept myself fully. And my going into the profession of creating humor and you know, it's like I went overdrive with the humor, but it was, I think it had to do with having the ability to laugh at yourself, not to take yourself so seriously. In other words, figure out how to take life seriously, but not yourself seriously. And I think that's what turns the tables.
And I think also, and by the way, is this Ann, the Ann that I know?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, yes. Ann. How are you, sweetheart?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, honey. Thank you so much for calling. Ann and I have been emailing each other back and forth. Ann read my book, and Ann also had a cerebral palsy, and she's a sweetheart. And what do I always tell you? You have to concentrate on the positives in life. You know, what you concentrate in life, what you can concentrate on in life is what you get back. That would be my advice to you and everyone out there. You have to learn to concentrate on the positive.
I agree.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Ann. I appreciate it.
Thank you
for calling, Ann.
Sure. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, sorry about that, but we were talking. I found your story so interesting about Carol Burnett, and that she knew, she just walked. Did she have any idea that you were going to be in the crowd, or was she,
she didn't. That's what blew me away.
Wow. Did you send her
a picture? Are you kidding?
I had written her so many times, and I think she just put two and two together. This must be that little kid with CP.
Did you get a picture with her at least, Jay?
I did not. And, you know, to this day, I have seen her many times, and I have never, ever gotten our picture taken together, and I don't know why. I think next time I will. I have been in a lot of events where I've wanted pictures taken with people, but I cannot get myself to ask. I back out. For some reason, that's the hardest thing for me to ask, but if somebody else does it for me, it gets done.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, here you are on television in front of millions of people.
I know.
No, you crack me up.
Well, you know what I think that has to do with? I think that has to do with the little Jerry. There's big Jerry and little Jerry. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting. When I was in the ninth grade, I changed the spelling to my name. I changed it to G-E-R-I, which it has been ever since. But up until the ninth grade, my name was G-E-R-R-Y. I think the little Jerry is the one that's afraid to ask the picture, the one that doesn't want to have CP, that doesn't... I mean, that little Jerry that was picked on and ridiculed as a kid is still inside me. But the big Jerry, who has experienced life for over 50 years, can carry the little Jerry, if that means anything.
It does, and I know exactly what you mean. It's not something that you forget about. I mean, I used to walk down the hallway, Jerry, and people would come up to me and just knock my books out of my hand. Just to laugh and watch me pick up my book and be late for class.
Yes, those things happen to me too.
And you know,
things belong to the little Jerry. That's the only way I can explain it. It's that little girl that was so humiliated, so to speak, is always going to be a part of you. But how do I put it? The love and acceptance and maturity of life can carry that pain through life. I mean, you know, you can't forget about it. It doesn't go away.
It doesn't. No matter how you try, it doesn't go away because, you know, it's always there, like you said.
For our listeners who don't have a disability, I can kind of identify to what you're talking about, Jerry, as far as changing the spelling of your name and the little, having been Cindy Smith my whole life and then getting married and taking on that last name, I didn't feel whole anymore. I felt, it was so odd. And unfortunately, I ended up divorced, but then after my divorce, I felt a strong need to go back to my childhood name, because I related so much to so much happiness and security to that time in my life. So, you know, I could totally understand why you would change the spelling.
Well, I just changed it because it was hard for me to physically write, because it takes a long time to write with cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And I felt G-E-R-R-Y was too long.
You know,
hey, Josephine, I'll trade with you. Josephine is even longer. That's why I go with Joseph.
Well, hey, my real name is Geraldine. If you want to get technical here.
girls, for those of us who don't know much about CP, out of curiosity, you're born with CP. Can it get worse? Does it stay the same? Or can somebody give me a little, educate us about that?
Well,
Gary, you want to go ahead?
The condition to the motor part of the brain that affects the central nervous system. It's not a disease. It's not something that you're going to die from. There are very degrees of cerebral palsy depending upon what part of the brain was injured. Affected, and I guess it doesn't get worse, but as you get older, there are different issues you have to deal with because your body ages and I don't know, you handle it, Josie.
All right. It's not progressive, but like Joey said, there are things that are affected because of the CP, not directly. Like in my case, I lean on my right side all the time. So my right hip is killing me. Like I have.
Yeah, you're going to put a lot of wear and tear on that side of your body. Abnormal. Yes.
Exactly. So, you're very prone to arthritis. You're very prone to back pain. I mean, Joey and I have talked about this. This past week has been hard for me. With a lot of pain. So, although it doesn't progress, there are a lot of things that happen because of the CP. And you know,
right.
What's interesting about cerebral palsy, no two cases of CP are exactly alike. You know?
You guys are pretty similar, though. Ironically,
oh, no.
Isn't it?
Well, no, I mean, we similar in that we both have CP and we both are hearing impaired. But
right.
I have a different level of cerebral palsy than Jerry does. No,
well,
my
yeah.
brain was affected in a different way. So, well, yes, we are similar. We are. Everybody with CP is similar, but we're all very different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it affects your body neurologically because of the brain, but can it also affect your learning habits and, the function of the brain,
yeah,
or is it strictly...
There are other conditions that can come along with CP depending upon, like Josie and I are both hearing impaired, which seems to be kind of common with CP, but there's also autism and mental retardation, and there are other conditions that can come coincide with it, but doesn't always, depending upon if that part of the brain was injured.
Oh, wow. Very specific, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
is. And it's not curable, but, through therapy, what was that?
Not yet.
I
am thoroughly for stem cell research because I believe there's something there for people with cerebral palsy.
I agree. I hope we see it in our lifetime, Jerry. We'll see, we'll see what happens. But I definitely
well,
think that
there's a lot
there's
happening around.
To it.
Yeah,
there's a lot happening. There's a lot of research going on.
Not only for CP, as, you guys know, I'm sure, but
oh,
some
yes.
of our listeners may not. It's crucial for many, many disabilities and Parkinson's, MS, paralysis.
Absolutely.
I mean, the list goes on and on. So you can darn well bet I'm voting for somebody who's all about stem cell research.
Right. I agree.
So,
I agree.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Josie. You go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about your motivational speaking. What is the message that you give your audience when you speak?
Hopefully to believe in yourself and to go after your dreams and to take risk in life. To just live life to its fullest. I hope that's what I lead people with. I give people the ability to laugh, permission to laugh. You know, it's funny because when you think about it, you know, when I grew up, I'm 52 years old, and my generation was told not to look at people with disabilities and especially not to laugh at them. And mm-hmm. here I made a career of demanding people to look at me and demanding people to laugh
at you, yeah. I remember the first time I saw you on The Facts of Life. I'm watching the show, and all of a sudden you come on, and you made some kind of comment about, you know, people thinking you're drunk, but you really have CP.
Yes.
I forgot what the line was. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, she's laughing about CP. And at first it was a shock to me, but then I found myself laughing. You know, I mean, the show was so groundbreaking, and it was not only important to me, it was important to millions of people out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I see what you mean. What advice would you give out? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
What advice would I give?
What advice would you give others out there who are interested in acting? Not only the disabled, but, you know, able-bodied, anybody who's interested in acting.
You know, the world is changing so dramatically, and I remember when Andy Warhol once said that everybody's going to have their 15 minutes of fame. And I think so many people are looking at that fame and money and celebrity, and that if that is your motive to go in the entertainment industry, then I suggest you change it. Because
mm-hmm.
The industry is difficult. It's a very hard industry, and there's a lot of rejection and a lot of years of hard work. And whether or not you attain wealth or fame is just debatable. You don't know. So
right.
you must love the craft. You must believe in yourself. You must look at it for a higher purpose than just for that, because if you're in for that, you're in for total heartbreak.
I can't imagine the strength it takes. I mean, growing up, all your whole life feeling rejected, okay, and then picking a career that's going to, well, first starting out with comedy is putting you right there, you know, right there in front of everybody. And, in fact, I remember you telling me, while we sat at lunch, about a story when you were on stage the first time. Or maybe it wasn't the first time, but one of the times.
Yes. Yeah, it was shortly when I started doing comedy. Well, I hadn't been doing it any longer than a couple of months, and I had gone on late at night. And I went up on stage, and I started my routine, and some guy yelled, what mental institution did they just let you out of, you retardo?
Oh.
And it spiraled. And everybody was laughing and everybody was saying cruel things. And it was like that moment that I was on that stage and heard that being said to me sent me back to age 8. And I was CERRY. And I was like, oh, my God.
CERRY, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. And because in my mind, on some level, I felt that celebrity was going to carry me away from that pain of being ridiculed as being called all those horrible names as a child. And here I was doing the very thing that was supposed to propel me out of it. And all
right.
I got was rejection. But it's interesting that you should mention that, because I just thought of this just now, is that sometimes unconsciously we recreate our reality again and again and again until we get it. And it's almost like, in some ways, I picked the most, the hardest profession that I could possibly pick, the most likely to experience rejection, because that's what I was used to.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, do you think that you've actually broke that cycle?
I hope I have. I certainly hope I have. I have.
Well, you know,
yes, absolutely. I've come a very, very long way. But it's
and you have a lot.
That is what I did.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of amazing, strong words to tell our listeners. That you said, I wrote some notes here because I was so touched by what you said. You said you don't believe in accidents, and that you can change anything, but you must make peace with your body, with who you are, in order to move forward. Do you recall a time, Jerry, when you were perhaps on stage or maybe trying out for a part or something, where you made peace with your body? Was there a time you were consciously aware of moving forward?
You know, I'll tell you this. When I was doing stand-up, I had a love-hate relationship with it in the early years. I loved being a success on stage and making people laugh, but the very act of getting behind that microphone and being articulate and not slurring my speech and trying to come in at the right place and holding the microphone still, it was agonizing. And most comedians, you have to put a light on them to flash on them to get off stage. Their time is up. I never needed a light. It was like, I got to get home. I'd be off that stage so quickly. I had no love for that moment except when I got the laughter. And when Facts of Life ended for me in 84, I thought that Facts of Life was going to be the ticket out of stand-up. I thought that it would propel me to do work behind the camera. I would never have to perform on stage again in front of a live audience. And so it was a huge wake-up call when I had to go right back to the stage to that agonizing pain all over again. And I have finally made peace. There's no struggle on stage. I can walk on stage and the soles of my feet will love taking those steps to the microphone. But that was not always there. And that came with accepting myself. In the years that I performed night after night, sometimes 5-6 nights a week, I hated it. I wanted to be off that stage as quickly as I was on it. But
when you
got the high from succeeding, it made up for all the pain of having to be there and struggle with this body. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
What was harder for you? Because I know for me, Jerry, I don't know if we've talked about this, but being hearing impaired for me is harder than having CP because it's not something that people can visually see. And a lot of times people would take that as a sign of unintelligence. What's harder for you? Is it the hearing impairment or is it the cerebral palsy?
I would say more often the hearing impairment.
Number one,
when you're on stage, if you have hecklers, in order to come back with a witty line, you got to hear what the heckler says. definitely, the hearing impaired does create problems. In fact, my press agent back in the 80s used to tell me, you know, everybody thinks you're a stuck-up snob, Jerry. I said, what do you mean? People talk to you and you keep walking. You keep going.
Oh, no.
What a snob. And I keep having to say, she can't hear you. So I think you perceive to be stuck up or stupid or whatever.
It creates
more problems than with just the CP. Yes, absolutely.
When I moved into my neighborhood, there was my neighbor across the street who would talk to me, and I wouldn't respond because I couldn't hear her. And then word got around the neighborhood that new people was not. So when I finally met her, she said, well, I say hello to you, you don't say hello. And I said to her, I'm sorry, I'm hearing impaired. When you need me and I don't respond, scream or throw something at me. Do whatever you have to do to get my attention, but I can't hear you. And then she just like looked at me with this look on the face like, oh, I'm sorry. Because I can imagine all those negative things she was saying about me in her head, and she suddenly felt guilty because I told her I was hearing impaired. So I definitely agree with you. I think the hearing impairment is definitely, for me, harder than the CP.
Yeah, it is.
What
is it? Makes you feel insecure if you know you're missing something. Luckily, I have wonderful, wonderful hearing aids now that help me tremendously, but it's taken a lot of years to get these. Because of the CP, the hearing aids are always difficult to get me. But I got these incredible, incredible hearing aids from Starkey Hearing Aids, and they don't feed that. I'm wearing them right now, and I think I've heard every question you've asked me.
Yes, you have. And you have to, what are the name of those hearing aids, the type of hearing aids, you know?
They're called Destiny, made by Starkey.
Okay. I have to look that up. I wanted to ask you, what are you working on now? What kind of projects do you have going on right now?
Just a lot of irons in the fire. I have gigs coming up in the future, but I'm also working on a script on a screenplay that I'm writing, and I'm working on my autobiography, and just possibly a play I want to do, just whatever I can get my hands on.
I can't wait to read your autobiography.
Yeah, me neither.
Oh. Thank you.
You'll have to come on again after you finish writing the book and tell everybody about it.
All right, that's a deal.
Okay. What are some of the fun traveling destinations you would recommend to a disabled traveler? Do you have any places that you travel that you would recommend to a disabled traveler?
You mean actually physically travel,
or?
I've been so blessed. I've been so, I've got to go to a lot of different places, and I would say one of my favorite places is definitely Hawaii.
Jerry,
Hawaii.
I have a question. Oh, sorry. I have a question for you, Jerry. Being so involved in the meeting and all that, what around your disability, can you tell us, first of all, in Deadwood, did you play, I didn't see the show, did you play an actor with CP?
Would I play somebody?
Did you play an actor with CP in Deadwood?
Well, technically, yes, but if you think about it, CP wasn't first diagnosed until 1921, and this was 1876, so they didn't know what it was.
Oh.
I didn't know what my problem was in Deadwood. I don't think anybody knew what my problem was in Deadwood.
Oh, okay, because I never saw the show, but I understand that you can get both the first, I think there's three series, you can go get
three
them
seasons.
At the... Yeah, three seasons that you can actually get those
videos.
There is a DVD coming out this October called Night of the White Pants, and it will be out on DVD where I play someone who has severe cerebral palsy and deaf. And I met this person, and it is a real person. So Unfortunately, it never made it to the theaters, but it is coming out on DVD in October called The Night of the White Pants.
Hey, that wasn't written by Alan Rucker, was it?
No.
Okay.
No. Amy Talkington.
Amy Talkington?
And
so that'll be out pretty quick here.
You do have a clip of that.
There is a little clip of that on my website, not a big clip of it. But like I said, the DVD will be made public in October.
We need to mention your site to the listeners. It's www.jerryjewell, spelled GerryJewell.com. Again, I'll spell that. That's GerryJewell.com. Jerry Jewell. There, and also, Jerry, I was looking on your site at some of those pictures. It's too bad you don't have a picture of you with Carol Burnett, but you have a lot of pictures of yourself.
I know.
With a lot of people, but you were so cute as a little baby.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So cute. Did you know that you...
More pictures up soon.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know you wanted to be an actress at a very young age, or did it kind of just come about? Because you said you wrote to Carol Burnett, you know, many times about comedy. How old were you when you realized you wanted to do that?
I kind of knew that. I got the bug in about the sixth grade, I think. And then by high school, I was there. I mean, people who have emailed me, kids that I went to school with from high school, tell me that the only thing they remember about me in high school was that all I talked about was that I wanted to be a comedian, Carol Burnett, and David Cassidy. That was the extent of any conversation with me.
And funnily enough, I called you earlier, and your phone clicked over, and it was the Partridge Family song.
Oh, I'll make it public. Why not?
You still have a crush on him, huh?
Well, actually, I've met David several times, and he's always been a sweetheart to me. And I guess, and like I said, high school was a time that shaped me, and that was a part of. That was a part of who I was then.
Well, do you ever hear people, like the people who picked on you in high school, have you heard from them since then?
I have.
And what did they say to you?
Actually, they're sorry.
Yeah.
Several people have apologized to me, actually.
Yeah,
but, it's no big deal. I mean, it was a long time ago.
And in fact, as you said, there are no accidents, and partly maybe one of their comments helped you to be a little more Jerry-like today. You know what I mean?
Yes, and believe it or not, I believe that a lot of what I went through, it was a part of my drive. It's what drove me to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the positive side to that was that it pushed me. Whereas maybe I would have been a little wimp without that.
Exactly.
Right.
You never quite know what these lessons are that are faced, these, like you said, the no accidents. I mean, at the time, it probably was just devastating, but looking back at it now, you can kind of see it a little more clearly.
Yeah. Oh, I see how it's a quilt, how it's a tapestry, how everything connects, and how it all creates a beautiful picture. But you have to be willing to have the courage to create it.
Yep.
Because,
you know, I was not born with a disability. Go ahead.
let me just say one thing, is that if you look at any quilt, at any finished quilt, the one side of it looks beautiful, but you turn it over and there's all these knots holding it together.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the knots of life that make up the whole beautiful quilt in the end, but you can't
yeah.
deny the knots that are holding it together.
That's beautiful.
Absolutely.
That's a beautiful allegory, yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, my kids recently got into shooting their pellet guns. Well, they're getting to the age now where they like to shoot at things. I'm sorry. So one of them accidentally hit a bird and injured it, and I said, you know what, that you're going to live with that forever. And the reason why I even use that as an allegory is because when I was growing up, I didn't have a disability. I had a car accident at 18, so I went from AB, able-bodied, to disabled at the age of 18 and having to re-identify with who I was and what I wanted in life. And I looked back with great distress, and even to this day, a lot of heartache over the times, even over something as ridiculous as somebody being overweight or something, those times that I said things or even thought things in my head about somebody that had a disability or that didn't look perfect, or, you know, I look back mm-hmm. at that with huge regret, and also not just because I'm disabled, but because I knew that I was injuring the soul of that person. But in reality, looking back, I guess it all has purpose and meaning.
But you know what? The most important thing we can all
okay.
do is to forgive ourselves first. Even more than forgiving others, it's forgiving yourself first. And then
uh-huh.
the step to forgiving others becomes easier. Because forgiveness
yeah.
and unconditional love is the greatest thing we can give anyone, and yet it's the hardest thing we have to give ourselves sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hey, girls, I hate to do this, but we have to go. Our time is up, unfortunately. But, Jerry, I know we will have you on again back and back if you'll have us, because you're just amazing, and I'm speaking from not just my own self. Both Josie and I are absolutely honored to have you on our show today, and I wanted to
thank you, Jerry. Even though you said I think I love you is on my phone, but that's okay.
Oh, that's great. You're awesome. Okay, so
you are unconditional.
All right, guys, we got to go, but Jerry, thank you so much, and I'd like to ask my listeners to mark their calendars, because next week on the 15th, I'm going to have my interview with Alan Rucker, who is the author of 9 books, one of which was a New York Times bestseller, another which is currently at number 29, but the one I'm going to be highlighting is titled The Best Seat in the House, How I Woke Up One Tuesday and Was Paralyzed for Life.
I love that.
Many blessings of love to everyone. Tune in here at BBS Radio every other Sunday, or you can go to my personal website at www.freedomtotravel.com. And don't forget, get out and see the world, because you can. There's a whole world waiting for you. What are you waiting for?
Still have the freedom.